This is Maurice Philogene, and welcome to the Try Life On podcast. Well, you may not believe it, but I've been an actor. I've tried out for the NFL, been a street cop, federal agent. I worked my way up the military chain of command to the rank of lieutenant colonel. I was also an executive at a global consulting firm, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate in the United States. I've started developing on a Mediterranean island, and to boot, I've traveled to 100 countries over 300 times, and generally all this stuff at the same time. No, I'm not trying to be everywhere. I'm not trying to do everything. What I was trying to do, and I'm still trying to do, is to try life on, to plug into planet and earth as intended, and to fill my life book with experiences and relationships, and not just accept the status quo. So what we're going to do on this podcast is introduce you to the mindset, the skill set, the soul set, the approach that is Try Life On, and expose you to the people who've been doing it just like me, their tools, their tips, their tactics to trying life on, because we all can try life on in our own way. So sit back, relax, let's go for a ride. Let's go try life on. So I didn't even know these kinds of businesses exist. And that's one of the joys I have running a podcast, to find, whether it's a lifestyle business or an entrepreneurial endeavor, there's so many ways out there that you can generate revenue so you can live a lifestyle that you truly care about. And that's exactly what my friend Betty Brennan did. Betty has been recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the top 100 female founders of a nationally recognized business. She was on the Inc. 500 and the Inc. 5000 for her company called Taylor Studios, which she started some 30 years ago and recently sold. And Taylor, check this out. And, you know, I would never think about this. And this is a good lesson for all of us. When you walk around and you see things in businesses, like, who made it? Where did it come from? And Taylor Studios would create things like exhibits for museums, nature centers, and other institutions across the country, and even do the same in outside of the country in places like Iceland. She executed 750 projects in over 32 years, everything ranging from $500 to $3 million a piece. It's an insane business, and that's the beautiful part about it. One of the reasons that I brought Betty on the show, one, because she's an entrepreneur and created an amazing business. And she talked about having, well, we talked about the fact that sometimes when you start on an entrepreneurial endeavor, it's a hobby or it's a lifestyle thing. But if you want to grow it and scale it into something, you have to start implementing processes, which she did to get her business to a point where it was acquired by someone else just last year, when she hired a mergers and acquisition firm to help her sell the business. What an amazing, amazing story. And the beautiful part of her journey is where she is now, from my perspective. She grew up on a farm, her family were farmers, and now she has her own farm and she's working on regenerative farming. She's been buying land for quite some time, and she contracts the land out to other farm to a farmer who plants things like beans and other commodities to be sold on the market. So she does make money from it. But it's the fact that she has kind of moved from this business venture mindset into a I'm going to plug into planet and life more mindset through running her farm, taking care of her horses. She's even buying sheep now to help with the farming process. I just think it's a very cool story of how one can be an entrepreneur and recognize when the time is right to transition to something totally different. And that's exactly what Betty Brennan did. One side note, I have said this many times before, a lot of the entrepreneurs that I speak with or people who are running side businesses while working a 9-to-5, even if they are generating revenue, one of the key things they always do is buy persistent assets with those revenue, specifically real estate and other stuff. But in this case, Betty did the exact same thing. The whole time that she was running Taylor Studios, she was buying commercial real estate, even an old Walmart she bought, so she could house a lot of the exhibits from her that she was building for her clients. She bought industrial property, commercial property, even farmland the entire time she was running her business. And that's what she relies on now. And I think it's a beautiful process. Real estate seems to always be in the portfolio of many of the successful people that I talk to. So I just wanted to call that out. Awesome conversation. She gave me a bit of advice about my entrepreneurial journey, where I want to take it in the next few years as I start to potentially ramp down what I do as an entrepreneur. So just enjoy this conversation. It was kind of a chill one. Betty's just one of those people that when you are around her, even if it's through a screen, you just kind of feel that vibe, like everything's going to be right. And she's just one of those good entrepreneurs. I'm glad I got her on the show. So sit back, relax, listen to this wide-reaching conversation with my new friend, Betty Brennan, the founder and co-creator for Taylor Studios. 30 years and just sold the business, and now she's running her own farm. I love it. Hope you enjoy this episode of Try Life On. What's happening?
Oh, I got people delivering materials, so hopefully it won't be noisy.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. Yeah. Whatever happens, happens. I'm cool with it. How are you?
Okay. I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for coming.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you know, you intrigue me in a big way. And I can't remember exactly how I ran into you on LinkedIn. I don't know if you commented on something I did or I commented on something you did, but you strike me very much as someone. So I know your whole backstory. That's why I wanted to get you on the show, and I'll explain the premise of the show. But you strike me very, very much as this amazing woman who's gone through this entrepreneurial journey, like full life cycle of creation, creativity, business, now wanting to plug into life in a different way. And I'm just generally on the same path. And I think I'm a few years behind you, kind of maybe exiting. I don't know if I'm going to exit my businesses per se, but I can feel my mental wherewithal going a different direction. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's why I wanted you to come. So I really, truly, truly appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So just since I haven't even given you the dialogue, I'll just give it to you. So Try Life On is a concept I started maybe 2 years ago now. And it just kind of pulled the principles and frameworks out of my life that allowed me to have multiple careers at the same time, become a solopreneur at the same time, be an entrepreneur at the same time while I was doing all this stuff, because I have this fundamental belief that we can try life on whenever we want to. We mm-hmm. were kind of thrown into this 20 years of formal education, which tells you what to be, where to go, what to do. And there's so many people out there who are trying to do some of the things that you and I have done, but are mm-hmm. looking for an excuse, a framework, motivation, someone that looks like them, someone that looks absolutely nothing like them, or what have you. And then I found out the story of Taylor Studios and how you started it, which I didn't even know that kind of business existed.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be a great thing for you to kind of share that story. And then I'll kind of lead us into the conversation of the entrepreneurial journey, if you will.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So you want a little history of Taylor Studios? And
Yeah, please, if you would.
Sure, yeah. You know, so I, even in college, I was entrepreneurial. And it's interesting, back in the Pleistocene when I was in college, you know, they didn't really teach small business. So I was taking like SBA classes at night while I'm studying. And I rode horses for a guy that was an entrepreneur. So he was an inspiration and encouraged me to be entrepreneurial. So while in college, I started the business with my ex-husband. So he was the artist. I was the business person. Mm-hmm. He started working for a taxidermist that got a job to make trees for a nature center. And so, yeah, just kind of
make trees, make
like resin, like fake trees, like,
okay.
Yeah. And so you go mold the real thing and then you cast a tree from the real thing kind of nice. Thing. And you teach natural history and so forth.
Yeah.
And so we realized that, there was a whole world out there of companies making exhibits, natural history and history exhibits, as a job, like, holy cow. That's a great career. And so we were both outdoorsy and loved nature. And we were into archaeology and paleontology. So we I went on to grad school. He went to work for a competitor of ours just for a couple years. I started my first business writing interactive computer programs for museums, but that wasn't paying the bills. Both of us paid our own way through college just by, you know, working three jobs and, you know, taking out loans. And, you know, it was a humble, humble start. You know, I always found a way to have a horse. Like I had found the entrepreneur that eventually gave me a place to live, and not only my horse, because I ran out of money, you know, and the next landlord, you know, I would barter with and, you know, find a way to have a horse. So, you know, where there's a will, there's a way kind of thing. So I had that passion too. So we started an artifact and fossil reproduction business. Eventually we combined our skills and started Taylor Studios. In the early days, I had a couple of what I call real jobs just to pay the bills.
So, did you do that right out of the concept of art like that? Was that something that you did right out of school, or did you go right out of college?
Yeah, you know, I started the first business, which was interactive computer programs for museums, while I was finishing up my MBA.
While you were doing your MBA, gotcha.
Yeah, and then, you know, the first real job, we decided that one of us needed to make an income, and then we to pay the bills. And so the first real job was like right after grad school. And then he quit at Chase Studio, which was similar to us. You know, and I just worked nights. That first job was lasted 6 months. I got let go. So I got fired of the first job. You know, they moved their corporate office kind of thing. And so then tried to make a go of it, but still needed to pay the bills. So got one other real job for like another 6 months until we got our first really big gig that allowed us to, you know,
just to start the company.
Yeah, to start the company. And we bootstrapped it.
You did bootstrap. So what exactly is, I know you've sold the business now, and I know it was operating for 30 years, which, by the way, congratulations. Like, that's not a small run by any means. That's 3 decades of an enormously hard work. So congratulations. Thank you. What exactly is / was Taylor Studios, and what were your clients? How did you even find them? And it sounds like the business just kind of grew organically, but give us a sense of what Taylor Studios was or is actually.
Sure. Yeah. So we plan, design, and build exhibits for museums, nature centers, corporations, universities. So in the 30 plus years that I was there, we had done over 700 projects in 45 states and 4 countries.
Wow.
Yeah. So clients like Gettysburg National Park, or we did a lot of state parks, a lot of jobs in Arkansas, for instance. We've done work at Adler Planetarium in Chicago. We've done work at the Smithsonian. So it's, you know, it's those exhibits that, you know, walk into a museum and look at it, but you never sort of think about somebody's got to make that.
Like, there's so much niche business out there. You would never even think that it's a viable business, but someone has to do it.
Right. Very creative. So a lot of artists on staff. I had metal workers, you know, woodworkers, sculptors, painters, designers, you know, and then the usual business accounting, you know, project management. So kind of a diverse staff, very creative, artistic. So yeah, that's the
genesis of. And did you guys have formal offices, or did you just go where the client was and create from there?
No, we had formal offices. So, you know, a little bit like you, some of my success is the commercial real estate.
Yeah.
I had rented commercial properties, which, you know, then Taylor Studios rented.
From rent?
Paid me rent. Yeah. So my first building was a 12,000 square foot building, and that was bought that in 1998. You know, the first place, you know, we started in the garage, renovated chicken coop, the loft of the horse barn. My landlord built us our first steel building, and then as we grew, you know, we needed more space. And to back up a little bit, I told Joe, that's my ex, and I bought him out in 2004-ish, after the divorce. So we stayed working together, and he's still a great friend. I told him, though, back in college, that I wanted to make the Inc. 500 someday. And literally, I was probably 19, 20 years old when I told him this. And 10 years later, we made it.
You made the Inc. 500.
Yeah. And then after that, we made the Inc. 5000 a couple times. And
holy smoke. There's a power. I have, I'm not there yet, but I got this story from, you remember Jim Carrey, the comedian?
Uh-huh, yeah.
He Jim Carrey carried around with him a $10 million check in his wallet. And he said, one day I'm going to cash it. And when he did the first Pet Detective, he got paid $10 million. So he cashed the check to himself.
That awesome. Kind of thing. Wow.
So it's funny that you said you were going to make the Inc. 500 and you made it, probably because it was subconsciously part of who you were. Did you have like growth targets for the business? Did you want it to be this massive entity, or was it more lifestyle related, or how did you look at it?
Yeah, no, I did want to grow it. You know, it's interesting. That's a little bit why I ended up buying Joe out. It became bigger than mom and pop, and I wanted to build the business. So I built process and procedure, you know, everything that you need to grow a business. I didn't achieve the goal that I had set as far as the revenue and income. I think, you know, after 20 years or so, you know, I found different ways to live my lifestyle. So I built the leadership team, which kind of let me slow down a little bit, but not much, you know, and I kept building the farm on the side, buying farmland.
Yeah, and the farm stuff too. Yeah.
And we had, by the way, so we had the 12,000 square foot building. I had bought, I had built two steel buildings and then bought another commercial building, and I still was running out of space. So in 2007, I bought an old Walmart building. And so we had a 74,000 square foot production facility. We called it Taylor Mart, you know, and I ended up renting out the other ones and sold another one. So, you know, there is that whole commercial property side of it too.
Yep. I find that, so, you know, I'm in the real estate business. We're similar, but we're a little bit different in that I did go the standard 9-to-5 route, but I was always doing something related to real estate, like funneling my 9-to-5 income into real estate one way or the other. But the more successful people I've talked to, and when I say successful, I don't necessarily mean money. It might be something that makes them generally happy or something like that. The more folks seem to take revenue from whatever it is that they're doing and throw it into real estate or some other persistent asset that kind of exists in the background. Did your family have that money blueprint per se for you to understand it was a good idea to invest in real estate, or was that just you, or was it homegrown?
Yeah, you know, I grew up on a farm, so I'm a farm kid. So they certainly invested in farmland and, you know, very frugal, taught me to save, you know, got me the checkbook in high school and, you know, made me pay for my own class ring and, you know, got my first job off the farm at age 14. So
you had this DNA to you. It was hardworking.
It taught me how to work hard for sure.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, they certainly didn't know commercial real estate like you and I do, but buying farmland was part of their, you know, focus. And, you know, you can talk business at the dinner table, where I think sometimes money talk at the dinner table is nobody does that, you know, but it wasn't unusual for us to talk farm business at the dinner table. So it was okay, you know, and so I think that was good.
Yep. And so my family is a Haitian immigrant family. All my parents knew was education and getting a good job and saving. So when I came back to them in my early 20s and said I was investing in real estate, it really kind of threw a loop in the family. And they were like, that's not smart and what have you. Now they're very supportive, of course.
Did they
now,
think it was too risky?
They just didn't understand it. And I think that's a reality, right? There's always some generation in the family that's a bit of a generation breaker and takes the family a different direction. And that happened to be me. I'm curious, for Taylor Studios and the style of work that you were doing relative to art, that's a deviation from farming.
Oh yeah.
But people struggle with this type of thing where they have a great idea. It's away from the typical family dynamic. Was that a struggle within your family, or was your family supportive of the idea? And did they even understand it? Which it took me a second to understand what you did as well.
Yeah, I think they were supportive, you know, in the early days. I mean, it was really humble. We had this little mail order division where we sold these artifact reproductions, and we'd be in the back of the pickup truck selling our wares. And they would help, you know, they'd come and, you know, cheer us on and yeah. You know, so I don't know that they understood it from the, you know, business sense, but I think they cheered me on. You know, it was interesting. They're extremely frugal. And there was a point where my mom said, you know, you should hire someone to clean your house so that you can focus on your business because yeah. your time is better spent at your business. And that kind of blew me away because hire someone to clean my house. And, you know, when coming from this frugal woman, yep. Was kind of, so she understood like my hours were better spent building the business than cleaning my own house.
I love it. I know that you, well, maybe you can speak on this. So you did it for 30 years. And the interesting thing, the thing that caught my attention when I was doing a little bit of research, but I think these numbers were from 2022. And I don't know exactly when you sold, but you guys had done work in 45 states and 4 different countries. Just real quick, how do you even get that expansive that your work ends up in different countries? Did those clients or customers find you? Was it US-based companies that had other offices in other countries? I'm fascinated by international stuff just because I'm developing overseas myself. I think that's a great way to try life on a little bit different, right? And yeah. feel something different. How do you get to 4 other countries for your work?
I think in most of the incidences where we had to bid our projects. We find our work by going to trade shows. We had this RFP lead system that told us when projects were happening. You know, we certainly built our reputation within the industry so people knew us mm-hmm. and referred to us. But you had to bid and propose most of the work. A lot of my travel was going and presenting to win the job.
I see.
Yeah. So one of the most recent international projects was in Iceland, and we were a subcontractor under another firm for that one. Gotcha. You know, so because we did the real creative artistic sculptural work, that was a little bit more rare in our industry. Yep. A lot of the companies would do the casework or the graphic panels, but they couldn't sculpt a woolly mammoth like we could. Mm-hmm. So for like Iceland, we sculpted a huge rock wall with the native birds covering this huge. So it was a big sculptural piece.
Yeah.
Was pretty cool, though. I got to, you know, we went to the grand opening and the client was just awesome. And he found me, I'm, you know, a horse person and I've ridden on several continents. He found me a horse ride when I went that day to go ride their horses, which are rare and unique. So it was pretty cool. So it added to my lifestyle, too,
yeah.
to be able to travel for the business.
And I think that's the holy grail. When I'm all cool for business making money and I want to make money, but I want money to be a consequence of doing something that I actually enjoy and it being part of my lifestyle. Sounds like you kind of had the same thing.
Yeah.
But I do tell people, and you said two words that, well, one particular word that resonated with me. You said the word process. And let me frame it. So I worked 25 years for Accenture. It's an IT management consulting firm, but obviously we did a lot of process reengineering, process improvement, things of that nature. I think when entrepreneurs or anyone who just wants to start something, solo business, entrepreneurial endeavor comes in, it's a hobby at first. And sometimes that hobby starts to make a lot of money, but it's not necessarily a business until you start investing in tech or processes or policies or whatever it is. I think it was in 2004 you bought Joe out, but however it is that you wanted to scale, can you just touch on the importance of recognizing, installing, and working on processes makes a true difference in how a business can grow?
Yeah, I don't think you can grow successfully without it, you know, especially if you have staff. It may be even without staff, you need processes to scale. And so, you know, in the beginning, it's as simple as, you know, minutes to meetings and agendas and using just normal business practices. And then you do job descriptions and then you have a process for how you interview. And then, you know, we had a visual workplace. So we built, you know, processes on the shop floor where we had, these boards that had all the project information on it, schedules and, you know, the number of hours to put in and the drawings and, you know, due dates. And We tracked people's hours from the beginning because we bid projects. So we needed that data to bid the next one. You know, so how many hours does it take to build a woolly mammoth? Well, we know we built something similar. And so I think and then the financial processes and making sure you're following GAAP procedures in your accounting. Right. And yeah, I don't know how I could have grown that company without that.
And I have to admit, like I started real estate as a 20 something, as an early 20 somethings, but I was just buying property. I was investing. I wasn't running a business. Mm-hmm. But when I started my syndication firm with partners, you quickly start to realize, oh man, I think we have 700 investors now or something. So we have customers. We have to service them. They need a portal. They need a process by which they can get information. They need tax documents. There is a robust difference between executing on your hobby and then building something that's there, that's robust, that is persistent, that's going to last, and that's going to service your customers. I caught that. I was listening to two of your podcasts and reading some information on you. I caught that you said that every time, that you started to work on processes for the business to grow it. And I just wanted to call that out because a lot of the people who listen to this particular show, yeah, they want to do entrepreneurial things, but there's something very different when it comes to a hobby or a lifestyle business versus what you did, which was scale a company, which gave you the ability to exit, which is incredible. So I'm curious about the exit because that's where I am in life at the moment. I'm probably in the next 5, 6, 7 years, I see myself pivoting in some kind of way. How did you exit? How did you find someone to potentially buy it? And like, what's the status of what you're doing now on your entrepreneurial evolution?
Originally, I hired a consultant that I thought I would sell to some of my leadership team. So I always had contingency plans throughout life and how I might do this. So that was one. So for 3 years, he taught them what it means to be an owner, but ultimately they didn't want to take the risk and buy the company. So I had to go to plan B. So I did hire an M&A firm. It's called Generational Equity, and they, you know, helped me put together a packet and put it out there on the market. I was pretty particular. I wanted someone that would keep my staff because I had employees that worked for me for over 20 years on staff.
Oh, really? They were family by that point.
Yeah. So I didn't want someone that would just flip it or fire everybody or, you know, that kind of thing. I wanted to take care of this staff. Mm-hmm. So I found that in the first guy that made an offer, and he said, you know, he'd keep the staff. That was his goal. And he wasn't about, you know, flipping it in 2 years. And so then Generational Equity helped me find the buyer. And I sold it to him, and then I worked for a year with him. So I sold that, and we closed in December of 21, and I exited last October-ish. So it's been just
October 22.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's been about a year.
Yeah. It just like, you know, my whole life has been Taylor Studios. So this this is a unique year, you know, and I love the business, what we did, and it was purposeful, and it was my baby. And, you know, maybe in the early years, I thought I'd be there until I was 80 and they'd just feed me lunch or something. But, you know, my goals changed over time, and this was the path I wanted to take. Try something.
That's okay. Goals can change.
Yeah.
But I think I venture to say that your identity probably is shifting a little bit as well, since you were so involved in Taylor Studios. To be blunt, because I retired from all three of my careers in the last 3 to 4 years. So
you've had a lot of change too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been tough. I was in the military for 22 years and I retired as a lieutenant colonel and federal agent. That was in October of 19, but I was also a police officer.
Tribe.
Yeah. Oh man. It's a tough one for me even to go back on military bases. I just went to a military funeral and I tried to put my uniform on and I couldn't do it. I couldn't put it back on. It's not that it's painful or anything. It's just like so many memories. They just flood back to you and it's tough. But so I retired from the military in October of 19, retired from being a midnight police officer in DC in September of 21, and then retired from that consulting firm that I stayed at for 25 years in October of 21. I found myself 4 months after not knowing what I was anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you don't see it coming. It's a little bit, and even though I still have the real estate and I'm doing some other things, it was just such a part of me for so long. It was tough. So I'm curious after, I mean, Taylor was your baby. Like you grew it from being an infant, a newborn and an infant to what it's become, enough value that somebody would want to buy it from you. What's the transition been like in a year since you've left?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's been surprisingly smooth. And I think it's because of that 3 years of, you know, thinking I might sell, you know, and then it happened fairly quickly. So, you know, I think I had it in my head for a long, long time that this was going to happen.
It was,
you know,
coming.
4 years, 5 years or something like that. Because, yeah, it's totally my identity. You know, and I'm in a small community, Champaign-Urbana, Central yep. Illinois. So I'm known, you know, locally. You know, I've just been awarded Entrepreneur of the Year Award from the local community college.
Wow, congrats. You know,
yeah, so that's still there, but that was my identity, right? And I quietly kind of felt like I've just quietly went to the farm and I'm not that person anymore. But I had always had that farm in the background and I didn't know what life was going to bring because I'm just letting it kind of let me find where the joy is and what I want to do. And, you know, I don't know that I've 100% picked that. But when I left, I was writing a book and I wrote the first shitty draft and I got halfway through the second edit and, you know, was starting to write, but I realized I didn't want to sit behind a desk anymore.
Right.
And so I decided to put that on the back burner and I'm moving in, you know, the different direction. I'm like, I'm going to get some sheep. I'm going at a farmer. A lot of it is to keep moving, you know,
yeah, that of
makes
course.
Me work. You know, I'm getting rid of honeysuckle out in the woods and it's a physical lifestyle. I'll write the book in the fourth quarter when I can't move anymore.
And you got some time. Yeah, I know. I get that. And so we did something similar in that I know that you have been creating your farm in the back, I think, which is what attracted me to you. I'm like, oh man, I think I'm headed that route in some way. And I'll tell you why and where. But when I knew I was going to leave, I got the same feeling you had, like, no, the change is coming in summer of 20. I just knew it. And the good thing I had done was I started building Quattro Capital, that investment firm in the background. And then on the side, I started developing real estate in Cyprus, which is an island in the Mediterranean, east of Greece.
Nice.
Yes, east of Greece. And when I retired, I had something to transition into. I didn't have to build something from scratch the day that I retired. And I think in reflection, it softened, even though I struggled a bit, it softened everything. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you use that approach. How well was the farm built out? Was that your thought process for it? Was like, let me have this thing ready so when I need to transition to it, it's here. Or what's just been the move from Taylor to the farm, if you will?
No, you know, it wasn't really the thought process. I was just investing in farmland. You know, it's more fun than stocks because you can, you know, ride your horse on it. Yeah, I think I've learned in this year, you know, I've started studying farming a little bit more. I have a contract farmer that plants the corn and beans. So I'm not physically sort of running the income side of the farm. It's just it's kind of contracted out.
Yeah.
And now I'm learning about regenerative farming and how we can do better by the soil and the environment and the land. And, you know, I don't know exactly where this is going to go, but I'm visiting farmers and I'm, you know, maybe I can do this myself. And the first step is the sheep because they're actually good for the soil and regenerating the grasslands. And, you know, you do this rotational grazing thing. So basically I'm in farmer university right now and learning.
Well, you'll be learning as you go. That's kind of a principle that I subscribe and tell people, just do it and course correct along the way. Learn as you go. You're getting another NBA, but this time in the real world, just kind of executing on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's intimidating. Even after running a business for this long, you know, what if I don't, what if the sheep die? What if I don't, you know, I still want to earn the income, have the income stream, you know, so, you know, sometimes with the regenerative, you don't make as much money in the first few years until you build up the soil. And yeah, so it's a lot, you know, it's a lot to learn, a whole new genre of business for me. Yep. But it's interesting. I looked on my bookshelf and probably a decade ago, I had bought a book that says you can farm. So it was kind of
in there. It was there.
I didn't voice it. You know, I'm a very much a goal setter. I've always, you know, I'm going to make the Inc. 500. I'm going to build the barn in the indoor arena. I'm going to, you know, I always set those goals. That wasn't necessarily in there, but I mean, it wasn't specific.
But
obviously it was in the back of my head. Yeah.
It was a seed of it.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why I was so attracted to you as a person, I am finding now in my 27th year of being an adult or a professional, whatever you want to call it. Yes, I want to make money. It's natural, but I'm finding myself wanting to do things more connected to the world, more connected to people, more connected to the planet itself. So when I did start developing land in Cyprus, really, I'm doing like you. Like my partner is from there. He lives there. He grew up there. So it's like real world MBA kind of thing. I'm watching what he's doing and he's teaching me. Like, how can I, yes, develop for the sake of making money, but do it sustainably and then create something for my family? I don't know if it's going to be a farm or a preserve or something, but something that actually gives back at the same time that I'm building business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the sense I got of you, was like, you built Taylor to what it is. It's doing good things in the world. And now you want to take the time to be even more connected to the world that has given to you. I feel like there's this natural progression there that I'm seeing even in my peers, but I don't know if it's just me seeing it because I care about it or it's just this true thing, but that's what I saw happening with you.
Yeah. It is interesting because it is a completely somewhat different mindset than Taylor Studios, because that was very much efficient productivity, profitability. Now it's like, how do I live this lifestyle that's enjoyable, also do good by the land and also make money, but not to the degree, like, I mean, I was so efficient in as a president of that company, you know, to the, you know, how quick I put gas in my car to how I ran the business. Now it's nice to kind of slow down and that's been a hard transition for me.
Yeah.
To slow down and just see what happens is a new approach for me. So that's been a bit of a psychological struggle. I'm so, you know, for 30 years used to being efficient, productive, profitable. This is a new way to look at it. So
yeah, you actually got to slow down and enjoy. I think you were enjoying yourself before, but now actually do it in a slower manner.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, not that's be so tough. Concerned about it. Maybe eventually, you know, we'll see where this farm goes, but it's nice to just slow, you know, cleaning stalls and getting honeysuckle out of the woods doesn't pay as well as being the president of a
but it sounds cool though.
But I can do it because though I you know, that whole life of saving and being frugal and putting away and building the business allows me to now slow down and do this.
And Betty, you know, I write newsletters on my website, Try Life On. And one of them, I travel a lot overseas, and I happen to be in Beirut, Lebanon for the summer. I lived there 2 months this summer. And I wrote this newsletter or just a blog, and I said, oh, I am struggling with idleness. I didn't realize it because I was waking up. Maybe I had one or two meetings on my calendar relative to real estate, but not a ton because our business processes and things are taking care of stuff. And
good job.
Which is good, but you find yourself a victim of your own success in a way. And you're just sitting there. So I've had to learn how to appreciate sitting. I don't want to say doing nothing because that's not what I do. Like this morning, I cleared my whole calendar. You're my only meeting this morning, purposefully, intentionally, because my 23-year-old is up from Atlanta, and I live with my 10-year-old. So we all had Thanksgiving together. And I just don't want anything around me because I want to be idle because they are here and to be intentional with that, you know. But mm-hmm. But I have found that like when you create something like a Taylor Studios and you've put yourself in this position, like everything all of a sudden slows down. And we were so busy before creating, and now we have to kind of create in a different way.
Yeah, it is a hard transition. You know, I had 6 or 7 meetings a day at Taylor Studios, and, you know, now I have one and I'm like, whoa, I got this meeting. It's such a weird thing. It is hard.
Yeah.
Hard and good, I suppose, you know, to learn to sit and be okay. I think one of the things that helped me run that company, though, is I always had the horses. You know, so
you always had the horses,
nature and the outdoors, and you can't really think about how to run a business when you've got to stay on the back of a horse. So that maybe brought balance to my life, you know, that was needed. So I've always had, you know, some of that, you know, nature kind of.
It matters, especially in this technology world we live in, and we need it. It's kind of how we stay connected, but it can also disconnect us from things that are important as well, like being outside, being in nature. Someone taught me grounding. So now it may sound weird, but first thing in the morning, I always grab my coffee. I go out in my yard and I walk around barefoot. And it's been one of the coolest things because there's this weird energy that kind of occurs with like, oh, I'm out here connecting with Mother Nature. I think it's a good thing. Because we always have shoes on. We never touch anything.
I have a grounding mat on my bed.
You do?
I do. Yeah. I have a local farmer lady that gives me massages, taught me about it, you know, and as a kid, I ran around barefoot all the time, but you know, now.
So,
have you felt it's made a difference?
It's so much so that, so I was always a 4 a.m. guy because I'm always going to the gym anyway, but so today's a prime example. My alarm went off at 3:40. I kind of snoozed till 4:10. And from 4:15 after coffee was made until 4:30, I was walking around in the backyard barefoot. And then I went to the gym.
Where are you at? Isn't it cold out?
It's cold. It was freezing today, which is why I'm going to move to the Mediterranean permanently. But it's cold. But it's just part of my, you know, if snow's on the ground, I'm probably not going to do it. But it's just part of the routine now to, like, not get so consumed on my laptop or on my phone, or I don't want to start the day that way. I know we live that way and I'm cool with it. That's how I do business and talk with people. But there's this aspect of life, again, why I was drawn to you. There's this aspect of life that has to deal with outside and nature and connecting to planet that I think is missed a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to see it on people's entrepreneurial arcs or journeys. This, I start from infancy as I was a kid where I used to play outside. I learned a few things. Now I'm going to build this business. Now I want to go back to being a kid and having fun outside again. It's this thing that's happening to people. And whether it's real or not, it's happening to me and I'm recognizing it. So I love the fact that you've kind of shifted your attention to building your farm, whether it's going to be regenerative farming or something else, that you've given attention to that. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think I have a theory that some of the emotional struggles and mental health issues that people are having is that lack of we're supposed to be outside.
I
read some statistics. I think people like 90% of their lives are inside. Well, we're not meant to do that. And I think, you know, with the horses, I always start my day with walking to the barn and feeding them. And before I lived on the farm, I rode my bike to the barn and fed them. So I always started my day with the outdoors and taking care of the horses. So I think that brought some balance to my life. Man, I had to get up, not as early as you, but really early.
that's military routines for sure. And, you know, I just as we wrap up, I vision a lot, but I vision through writing my perfect day, whatever I want it to be. And because I am doing some real estate development in Cyprus, I'm building myself a home. Well, I'm keeping one of the homes. It's modest. It's not a big fancy thing. It's just 3-bedroom and probably like 2,000 square feet or something. But it's on the side of a mountain.
Nice.
The backyard is a government protected land reserve on a mountain.
Perfect.
So I'm going to plant. I'll be there when the ground gets a little bit warmer, but I'm going to plant olive trees and fig trees. And then the front is this view to the Mediterranean.
Wow.
And I did it purposefully. And the funny thing is, with all the real estate I've ever done, I have never bought a home for myself, ever.
Wow.
Ever. No, because I believed more in renting. I never really thought about creating home space that felt what I anticipate your farm feels like, or how you feel with the horses or whatever. So I'm building that for myself now.
Nice.
It's just this art. So I wanted to bring you on because I want people to understand, like, hustle, do good, create value, get paid for it. But also, please take the time to plug into the planet, because we've got this one journey to exist. And I don't think all of it just needs to be grind, grind, grind all the time. I do think there is this slowdown period that occurs. And it may, for some, it might be later. For some, it might be earlier. I sense mine coming on. But you have certainly had this amazing 30-year journey with Taylor Studios. I also like calling out businesses that no one would ever think about. Didn't know that kind of thing exists. So the question I ask everybody kind of towards the end of the show is, folks who listen are trying to do something. They want to leave corporate and start a business. They want to leave entrepreneurialism and go back to 9 to 5 where it's more stable. They want to be a, who knows, maybe they want to be an actor. I don't know. They're trying to try life on in some way, and they get motivation and inspiration from folks like you. What would be just one thing you would suggest to someone who wants to try life on their way?
Yeah, I think one of the keys to my success is I did have a long-term vision. You know, hey, I'm going to make thing 500 someday. I'm going to build that horse barn someday. Or, you know, so what you can do in 20 years is incredible. And I think a lot of people just think about next week or next year. And so it's that whole compounding interest thing. You know, it takes sometimes to achieve it, it takes a long time, not to the degree to make you anxious about the future, but to think about what you could do in 20 years instead of just next week or a year. So have a long-term vision, and it can change, like we said, but to have this destination of what you want your life to look like in 20 years. I'm not sure that people think about that enough.
I'm sure they don't think about it, because we live in this very instant Uber society now where everybody wants to get everything so quickly. Yeah, but I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, to have a vision. Well, you certainly had your vision. I think it's amazing what you've done. I'm even more kind of enthralled. I hope you continue to develop the farm website, because I'm kind of watching.
Okay, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. But I want to thank you for swinging by, because we need more examples like you of people who've just kind of taken life by the horns and are doing it your way and trying life on. So thank you. It's much appreciated.
Thanks for having me. And you inspire me also. I appreciate what you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, this is Maurice, host of the Try Life On podcast, and thank you for listening to another episode. I hope you are finding it useful in helping you design your own lifestyle that you don't need a vacation from. If that's the case, please consider dropping a review for me, whether in Apple, iTunes, or in Spotify. Drop a review, put some stars on it, give me some feedback on how I can make the podcast better, what information you are looking for. I am doing my best to get information to you on the Try Life On principles, the 5 freedoms, how to build lifestyle, travel hacking, all of it. And I want to do it for you. So please do a review for me. And until next time, my name is Maurice Philogene, and this is the Try Life On podcast. Peace.